that's a relief, probably. Just put it all down, it's a relief. But also there's maybe some restlessness. You want to do something. You want to absorb into something, see something, hear something. You know. And all you have is sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, eat, sit, walk. So eating becomes important, maybe. Or a shower. But just, you know, little things can take on huge proportions. But the idea here is not to torture you, but rather to let the mind calm down just through the nature of sense restraint. Because sense restraint, when it's done in a way which isn't through self-mortification, we're not doing that, when it's just done in a kind of wholesome way that we're doing, then the whole sensorium is less stimulated. There's less things bombarding the senses, and the mind has a natural tendency to calm down to some extent. But also there's probably resistance to that, so maybe you feel annoyed or restless or bored. And the trick is how can I sustain present moment awareness with these negative things that come up into the mind, like boredom or restlessness or aversion? How can I just witness to them as energies that arise, hang about for a while, and then cease? Because if I can do that and not get caught up in them, then that witnessing consciousness becomes, one notices the depth of that, depth of silence that exists in that witnessing consciousness. If, however, one just simply gets caught up all the time with the aversions and the boredoms and that, then our attention is preoccupied with change. So the essential teaching, one of the essential teachings of Buddhism is the teaching on change, is that which arises hangs about for a while and then ceases. If we know change and we witness to it, then that witnessing of change is a kind of freedom. But if we are always trying to change, then we are enmeshed in change, and hence we are always victims of change. See what I mean? So you something comes up in your practice. You're sitting here, and maybe you feel lonely. You have some loving relationship which you think of, maybe a child or grandchild or parent or whatever, or a partner, and you feel lonely for that person. And that's quite natural, because if you've had a chance to be with them and there's been, you know, really closeness and warmth and so on, and then you haven't got that, then maybe you crave, or you're used to having that warmth and closeness. So then the feeling of wanting that comes up, and maybe a feeling of loneliness. Now if you just witness to that, that's a function of mind, it's conditioned by memory causes that comes in, stays for a while, and you can just know that. This is the feeling of loneliness, or wanting to be with someone, and make no problem around it. Then that's Buddha knowing change. That's awareness knowing change. It changes and it ceases. If you don't, if then you start to permanentize this feeling, and you create a sense, you think, oh gosh, how long am I going to feel this? Or, oh, I wish this person was here. You start to think about it. And you create this kind of solidity, structure of suffering around that. So the witnessing of change is the road to freedom, when it's just known as change. But that's hard to do, because there are a lot of hooks. Things grab us. So rather than noticing change, we get caught up in things that change in various ways. And the ways we get caught up are called defilements. So the aversions we feel, or the fantasies that our mind goes off into, the planning, the annoyance we have for each other in some kinds of ways, the judgments we have of each other, these things begin to preoccupy our attention. And as long as our attention is preoccupied with thoughts, with emotions, with feelings, that preoccupation takes us away from the core of our existence, which is actually very peaceful. We're taken out. And that's what sense experience tends to do. It pulls people out. Now we have to function in a sense world. We have to organize, and we need to speak and write and produce and be on time and so on and so forth. But a retreat now, we don't have to do that. You don't have to produce anything. You don't have to make anything. You don't have to become anything. You don't have to figure anything out. You don't have to. You don't even have to cook. I don't have to wash dishes. It's so nice. I kind of love it. I guess people give me food. Because I'm doing a lot of cooking and washing of dishes these days. Take care of mom, so just, oh, someone else is doing the cups. Life's a pleasant feeling. So the mind, which is always producing and becoming and getting and sorting out, that restless mind, we want to witness to that. And so what we do is we choose simple objects. So we choose something like just the body. And we just try to use that as a kind of post of reminding us, well, this is about the present moment. The present moment feels this way. And we use that post as a way of really stabilizing the mind and composing the mind on the way things are. Now, that's not a function of desire. That's a function of awakening. You don't have to, it's not like you're trying to get something, but you're noticing what is, and that's very important. To notice what is, you don't need desire, you just need to remember. So it's a matter of recollection, and this is one of the skills that we develop in Buddhist practice, are the skills of recollection. You recollect the present moment, or you remember to remember, or you remember to be present, or you are mindful. So mindfulness isn't control. A lot of people, sometimes people mistake mindfulness as control. Somehow, if I'm mindful, maybe I won't feel any emotions. Not necessarily. You could be mindful and watch yourself getting uptight. It's a habit. It's a habit of mind. So if you make that, again, if you make that the golden standard, awakeness, you can always do that. You can certainly forget. That's true. We do forget. We get lost in our dreams and such like. But every now and then, we come to, we surface, and we say, "Ah, this is the way it is now." Now, if you can put in there, that's it. That's it. Really, really, really. This is it. That, don't go any further. And just be grateful for it and be with that. And notice the mind, which notices the way things are. Notice the mind which is awake. Notice awakeness. This just that. So it's not the quality of the experience, but rather it's the knowing of the experience. The quality is where we get caught up. So we tend to always, if we're preoccupied with that which changes, then we're always preoccupied with qualities. We want the pleasant, and we want to get rid of the unpleasant. Whereas the knowing of change knows pleasant arising and ceasing, unpleasant arising and ceasing. That's the difference. It's a simple difference, but it's a difficult difference. So it's very hard to kind of sit through half an hour of your legs hurting. It's not easy, not easy to do that, and hence perseverance. Patience and perseverance is a big part of the spiritual life, because much of life is not pleasant. Much of life is just ho-hum. Ordinary or painful, and the ability to stay the course and persevere with just the neutrality of a situation or the unpleasant of a situation builds a foundation for peace. Is a foundation for peace. So I certainly found that in Thailand, that when I had never really developed any meditation, never done it in retreats, I didn't know what they were. I just sort of stumbled onto this stuff. And I was used to lots of distractions, and basically I've been traveling for 3 years, so I could just, you know, got bored with a country, go to another country, change the currency. Of course, I got bored too, but so basically the ability just to stay with something, and not that I was slovenly, but I, you know, hadn't really developed that, I just kind of moved around. So then go into a monastery, go into a retreat, say, go into a monastery, all of a sudden the ability to distract wasn't there. And because I had always distracted when I felt bored than when I got into the monastery and I felt bored. What now? What now? Ah, bear with the restlessness of the mind, because that's what I had cultivated. That was my, that was the karmic result of my life, was a restless mind. It was untrained. Well, how else could it be? You don't train, it's not going to be trained. I'd go to Ajahn Chah and I'd say, oh, my practice. He says, gum. Gum is the word, I've heard this, gum in Thai is karma. It's the corruption of the word karma. They say gum, which is a really gum, sticky word. It's a kind of really, and he just said, well, gum. You haven't developed your mind, what do you want me to do about it? And they say, bear with it. You know, and yeah, the way they talk, and just hang in there, bear with it. No kind of, oh, you poor thing, dear Dhamma. Oh, have a lolly. None of that. It's just grow up, hang in there, it'll change. Thanks. But actually, it's just what I needed. It's just, you know, I just needed to, yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, sex, drugs, and rock and roll doesn't calm the mind. Nope. And so then this just forbearance, which wasn't a kind of deeply detailed analysis of dependent origination, which I had been reading, which is intellectually quite stimulating, quite fun, and frustrating and all that. It's really kind of, this is just heat, language you don't understand, and sticky rice. That was it. But I think there was tremendous power in that, not because it was intellectual, but because it was of another sort. And it's those kinds of practices that are unseen on a retreat. You don't see that. You don't see that part. I mean, you see it in some sense, but the profit of that. Well, you know, because you think, what's the use of just sitting here and feeling painful knees? And well, let's go skiing. Come on, let's do something interesting. And that would be, you know, that would have its profit too. But there is great profit in being able to witness the unpleasant, because that builds a strength of mind which is not dependent on desire fulfilled. And that's what we're going, the idea of Nibbana, or the idea of enlightenment, is a happiness which is unconditioned, or a freedom or a peace which is unconditioned, which is not dependent on getting everything you want, the way you want it. So, if you can bring up that word, I used the word patience this morning, or forbearance, or perseverance, as a kind of development of skillful means, rather than not just, oh, I have to bear with this now. That's a kind of resignation. Okay, I'm going to bear with it. That's not wisdom. But actually, well, what is patience? What is forbearance? What does it mean to sit through half an hour where it's not pleasant? You know, where your meditation object has gone out to the ferry somewhere, and you know you're just sitting waiting for me to ring the bell, right? And maybe kind of doing. Ring, ring. And I'm feeling restless. Why do I feel restless? Why do I want to ring the bell? But to actually see, you know, see the mind, and then just say, okay, I'm just going to practice forbearance for 10 minutes, say, or 15 minutes. To actually make that a training. So what do I need? First of all, I need to awaken to the fact that I just want to get out of here. And I'm awakened to the fact, well, pain feels this way. I'm awakened to the fact that there's a practice here. There's something skillful that can be developed. And then to develop that skill. And that lays a foundation. And that you can't just do, you can do it willfully for a while. You can willfully say, I'm not going to move. But you can't live a life like that. You just hate Buddhism after, if that's it. You just, God, I hate this stuff. So there has to be skill in it. There has to be wisdom. There always has to be kindness. The forbearance has to be compassionate rather than just willful. You say, well, what's compassionate about just torturing yourself for half an hour? That doesn't sound like compassion. But notice when you can do that, when you have the forbearance to bear with 20 minutes, that if you do it well, the mind gets, it's very peaceful. Because it's no longer engaged with the need for sense pleasure. It comes to a different dimension. It comes to a dimension of peace which is not dependent on getting everything you want. It has to be done skillfully, and you have to learn how to do that. But there is a great power in it. There's a great strength in it, and something that you learn. Like with Ajahn Chah, he played cat and mouse with us a lot. And you kind of think, oh, Ajahn Chah, you'd be with him. I lots of times I didn't like him. I loved him, but I didn't like him. And I always took it personally. He's doing this to me. He's not going to because of me. And he would just chuckle. And it was interesting about a teacher who was totally fearless, that he would be kind enough to put me through the ropes. Because it was a real kindness. And I'm afraid to do that to these guys. I haven't got the guts to do that they need it. But, and there's just the kind of the fearlessness of someone like that who's willing to, you know, just talk for 4 hours. And know everyone's bored with it. And just talk. Why do you suffer? So contemplate that. What, like just beyond the meditation object and trying to, you know, trying to get enlightened and do all of that. Well, what are the foundations for a really stable mind? What do you need? And I keep putting these little bits onto it, don't I? So, the sense of respect, right? Respect for your own abilities. That if you can see cause and effect, you can be enlightened. If you can notice how things work, and if you can develop skill from that, you can be enlightened. You can be free. You can be happy. You have that. You have that. And that's self-respect. It's not self-promotion. Oh yeah, I'm great. You know. I'm going to get enlightened to, you know, day six or something. That's silly. But there is this sense that we, because we have reflective minds, and that's what it takes. It takes a mind which can notice, this is the way it is now. Okay. I make this kind of effort. The result's not good. Okay. This is the way it is now. I make this kind of effort. The result's good. I take that result and I train. You can do that. You can be free. So that's a kind of respect for your own abilities, and then respect for the teaching. You know, a kind of sense, well, there are beings who have, or are just a bit ahead of me. You know, they've done a bit more work than me, the Buddha, other teachers, whoever, and the respect for that, to listen, not just to blindly believe, but to listen, and then respect for that cause and effect relationship which works in the mind. Deeply respecting the causal nature of karma. So you have that kind of package about your own being and about the teaching. Kindness. I keep hammering away at that, but try to connect to those images in your own life which open your heart. Get that connection going. It might be a person, whatever it is. Get that. Learn how to bring that up quickly. Become adept at kindness. And we all have those connections. We have connections to situations in our life where we do feel open. And then take that kindness and apply it to moment by moment by moment by moment. So the practices of metta are dualistic and non-dualistic. Dualistic, the way they're couched is, may I be well, may my mom be well, may my brother be well, may my brothers be well, may you be well, me and you, right? Non-dualistically is, this moment has arisen, stays for a while and it ceases. Kindness to each moment. Kindness to each moment, where there is no duality. There is just this image, that image, this image, that image. And a kindness to all of it as it flows through consciousness. That's the non-dual way of talking about metta. So connect, get the connection to metta through an image, connect it to your heart, and then try to apply it to your painful knee or to that awful emotion which has come up again or whatever it is. Keep applying kindness. So kindness becomes conjoined with awareness, so affectionate attention, something like that. That's not sentimental. Not being sentimental, it is an aspect of mind, it is a way of the heart, it's a way that we can truly learn. So we learn when we have respect and when we're kind, we learn a lot. And that's what we have to somehow learn how to do moment by moment, moment by moment. But our ingrained habits, quite often in some bits of ourselves, we are not kind or respectful to. We just want to get rid of them, and annihilate them or judge them or whatever. So we build up the strength of respect, kindness, the ability to continually awaken. So present moment awareness, just keep training in that. This is the way to keep awaking up the mind, waking. And then beginning to understand this kind of clear comprehension that, okay, this is a mood, or this is an emotion, this is aversion, this is wholesome, this is unwholesome. Begin to really have this, what we call mindfulness and clear comprehension, sati sampajanya. Really, not only are you awake to the moment, but you understand the moment. You understand what is skill and not skill. You understand what to abandon, what to let go of, and what to develop. And then perseverance, because in terms of abandoning the unwholesome or the purification of the unwholesome, you need a lot of patience, because you get things coming up, negativities, memories, aversions, all those are going to come up into consciousness, and they're often not very pretty. They're not fun. You feel lonely, maybe. Loneliness comes up into consciousness. It's just loneliness. It's just that way. So the forbearance, the mindfulness and clear comprehension, this is a condition of mind. It's not permanent. It will change. As opposed to permanentizing, I hate to but that's what we do. We permanentize something like loneliness comes up. Oh, I'm so lonely. Oh, God. And we create a self, we create a kind of solid structure, and we get caught by it. It's attachment. Whereas really knowing this is just a changing mood, emotion. This will change. If I can say that, wow, it's such a relief. And when you get to, oh no, there's that one again. No, it'll change. And then you begin to have this what we call mindfulness and clear comprehension. And then the forbearance. This will change. I'll let it change. It's okay. I can hang in. It'll go. And then the trust in that, the trust in awareness, the trust in forbearance, the trust in the goodness of your practices. All of that is a foundation for enlightenment, rather than just sort of, kind of hammering away at your nose until your head pops open. I haven't seen that work. Mostly it's sort of just a lot of grunt work. It's just little things. But then over time of a retreat, you really do build this kind of strengths of mind, which are the factors of enlightenment, or the paramitas, whatever you want to talk about that. So it's little things, it's not kind of grand things. And these are things that we can do. Okay, I'll leave that for tonight.
Andamayang varatamagata sadhu karang dhamase sadhu 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 anumodami.
Finish with a chant.